I'm Dave Cawley, investigative journalist and host of the podcast, Cold. In October of 1985, a woman named Cherie Warren left work at a busy Salt Lake City office
to meet her estranged husband at a downtown auto dealership.
She never made it home. Cherie's car surfaced weeks later in Las Vegas.
In the parking lot of a hotel casino.
No one knows how it got there.
Strange. It was strange.
Both Cherie's estranged husband and her boyfriend raised suspicion for investigators.
I kind of thought that he might have done something.
But no arrests were ever made. In Cold Season 3, we dig into double lives, make new connections in the case, and examine the difficulty raised by reasonable doubt.
We want answers just as much as anyone else.
They have creeps like that now too, so nothing's changed.
That's the new Cold Season 3, The Search for Cherie. Now available anywhere you get your podcasts.
If money affects your life in any way, Money Making Sense will talk about it. Be financially healthy, wealthy, and wise. Here's your host, Heather Kelly.
Welcome to Money Making Sense, the show that talks about all things money. Today, we're talking about how far in debt are you? Are you willing to go, and why? Joining me today is Tendai Kapfitse with LendingTree. Welcome to the show.
Thank you for having me.
I just read a report that residents of Salt Lake City are third most likely to go way far into debt getting a mortgage, correct?
Yeah. So what we did is we looked at something that we're calling the leverage ratio, which is how many times your income is the loan that you're getting to buy your house. And this is from data that the federal government puts out called the Home Mortgage Disclosure Act data. And it covers all loans across the United States. And what we found in Salt Lake City was that people were borrowing, on average, 3.5 times their income in terms of how much money they were borrowing for a mortgage.
So let's break this down. Let's say I make $50,000 a year. Most economists would say you should not buy a house that's more than 3 times your yearly income. So if I make $50,000 a year, I should not be getting into a home that's more than $150,000.
Yeah, that would be a good rule of thumb. Yes.
Okay. Have you been to Salt Lake City and seen the housing prices here?
I actually have never been to Salt Lake City, unfortunately. I would love to.
You can't even buy a one-bedroom, dilapidated, about to fall in on itself home for less than $200,000 here.
Yeah.
So is that why most people in Salt Lake are buying more than their 3 times level of income?
Yeah, so there's a couple of things going on, and some of which will make this a little bit less concerning. So first thing is, yes, there is a supply crunch in Salt Lake City. There's definitely a need for more housing, and this is true in many cities across the country. We need to increase the housing supply so that home prices don't increase so fast. But another thing that's happening in Salt Lake City, we've done some other studies where we've shown that in Salt Lake City, the home buyers are younger than in some other cities. So people get into home ownership much earlier, which can often mean that, you know, they have a little bit less income because they've been in their careers for less time. And another thing that happens in Salt Lake City was that we found that it has the highest number of people who buy homes with somebody else, right? So inversely, it has the lowest number of single home buyers. Okay. So in the data that we look at, it only tells you the income of the primary mortgage applicant, so of one home buyer. So typically in Salt Lake City, even though we're saying that the leverage is 3.5, there's usually a second home buyer partnering up with that person who is typically the spouse. So that would make those numbers look a little bit better.
So are we saying the home itself should not be worth than 3 times more than your income, or that the mortgage you take out on that home should not be more than 3 times your income?
This is specifically about the mortgage, because your income is what you use to pay off the mortgage.
Oh, okay. So if I had a healthy down payment, if I was buying a $300,000 home, but I had a really good down payment and I was able to bring that down to almost 3 times my yearly income, that is within reason.
Yeah, that would be less of a concern. You would need to kind of decide that, you know, do you want to put so much of your wealth or your net worth in your house? But yeah, it would be less of a concern if you had that huge down payment.
You said that a lot of cities are in this boat where the housing prices are just skyrocketing. So Salt Lake is number three. What were the top two cities where people are leveraging more of their income than they should to buy a home?
So Los Angeles was at the top and San Diego was second. And then after Salt Lake City, we had San Francisco. So it's a big California problem. And another thing that is happening in Salt Lake City is that, and you know, a lot of these states near California, is that a lot of people are moving from California into some of these nearby states, and that's also contributing to home prices increasing in a place like Salt Lake City.
Yeah, they call the Wasatch Front, where Salt Lake is located, the Silicon Slopes, because people from Silicon Valley is moving into right against the mountains. Did Lending Tree go further into why people in Salt Lake are buying such a younger age? Is that investigated at all?
We didn't investigate the reasons, but I think one of the things that we found in other studies is that people in Salt Lake City, they get married younger than in many other cities. And so, you know, there's several things that are catalysts for home buying. Marriage is certainly one of them. And having a baby is another big thing that incentivizes people or motivates people to buy a house. And so in Salt Lake City, we see younger marriages and younger first-time parents. And, you know, that leads to younger first-time home buyers.
If technically you shouldn't have a mortgage that's more than three times your yearly income, how are people getting loans that go over that ratio?
So the rule of thumb is not necessarily like a lending standard, right? It's just, you know, something that will leave you a little bit more comfortable in terms of being able to manage your debt. You can get loans that are up to, well, this is a different measure. It's called a debt to income, but up to 40 and 50%. There are, you know, various special lending programs from Fannie Mae and Freddie Mac and from the FHA that aim to increase access to home ownership. So those would typically enable people to, you know, stretch a little bit further in terms of the amount of money they can borrow for a mortgage. But just because you can doesn't mean that you should. and so, you know, I generally counsel people not to overextend themselves.
This is a great place for a break. When we come back, I want to go more into that just because you can doesn't mean you should philosophy. So we'll be right back with Tendai Kapfidze. He is a chief economist.
I'm Dave Cawley, investigative journalist and host of the podcast, Cold. Don't miss Cold's new Season 3, where I look into the unsolved disappearance of Cherie Warren, a woman last seen leaving her job at a Salt Lake City office in 1985. Police cast suspicion on Cherie's estranged husband and boyfriend, but never made any arrests or recovered Cherie's remains. Find Cold Season 3, The Search for Cherie, anywhere you get your podcasts.
Welcome back to Money Making Sense, the show that affects your life in any way whatsoever. We're talking about it, and today it's about how much debt are you willing to take on for your mortgage. Joining me today is Tendai Kapfidze. He's a chief economist with LendingTree. In the last segment, we were wrapping up. Salt Lake City has the third highest percentage of people who go into debt above that sweet spot of three times their yearly income. And while mortgage companies, they want your money. So they'll take it even if you're way over that three times your yearly income. You were talking a little bit about a debt to income ratio, which I want to get back to. But you said something right at the end that I like. Just because you can doesn't mean you should. So why are people shoulding?
Still, you should ultimately make decisions that are the best for you personally and try not to over obligate yourself to a particular financial obligation. And so I think some people do this. Sometimes it's about expectations for future income. Sometimes, like I said earlier, our data here will only look at the primary applicant. Sometimes there's multiple people who will be living in that house. If it's a married couple, or there's even an increase of, you know, single people who choose to buy homes together. So the income that we're looking at here may not be the total household income, it's just the income of the primary individual who's borrowing that mortgage. So what these ratios are really reflecting, I think, is more about what's happening with home prices in these areas relative to what's happening with income. So when you have home prices that are growing much faster than income, then you tend to have people having to extend themselves a little bit further in order to access home ownership.
And some of the lenders will go up as high, I believe, as 45% of your income. So that only leaves you 55%, which if you have a car or two, you have to pay those car payments, your utilities, your food. What if you have kids and they're going to school and they have school activities and you have to buy things for them, or maybe it's private school? So people need to think about that. If I got married right now, I'm a young couple, we're getting married, woohoo, and I overextend myself, so to speak, go all the way up to that 45% debt to ratio, and then all of a sudden I start having kids, I could be in trouble.
Definitely. And, you know, there's studies that show that the higher your debt to income ratio, you know, the higher your risk of, you know, getting into trouble paying your mortgage, getting delinquent, and ultimately, you know, having a foreclosure. So it's certainly something that you should consider, not just what your current obligations are, but also what future obligations you might have or future expenses that you might have when you are, you know, getting a mortgage, and seeing where you're comfortable with that debt-to-income ratio.
And I would think that keeping up with the Joneses might have a bit to do with this. As you said, there's a lot of younger people here in the state of Utah. They're getting married at an earlier age than the rest of the country. And maybe that's, you know, they're right out of college, or they got married their senior year of school. And then they move into the workforce where you have people that are 10 or 15 years ahead of them. But they see what those people have, and it feels like, oh, I got to keep up with my coworker.
Yeah, and that's usually a path to poor financial decisions. And, you know, it's very challenging, right? We all see everybody around us. And then especially, you know, with things like social media, where everything on social media looks super perfect, it's a lot of temptation to try and, you know, kind of aspire or to live similar to the people around you. I think probably the best thing, you know, people can do is, you know, maybe get a financial advisor, have somebody help you make financial decisions that are less emotional, and that can be helpful even for people who are in the finance industry, such as myself, who I, you know, I consider myself a finance expert, but I work with an advisor who, you know, kind of watches my blind spots, right? Like, hey, Tendai, maybe you need to think about this particular decision a little bit more because it doesn't align with these other plans that you said you have in terms of your goals for your financial health. So certainly it's, you know, trying to get the emotion out of financial decisions will help anybody a great deal.
I am coming to you, Tendai. Here's my story.
All right.
The most gorgeous house that I've ever seen just showed up. It's $300,000. I can bring in about, I don't know, $60,000 as a down payment. I've saved up all this money. I was going to put it for my retirement, but hey, the house is better. And I make $40,000 a year. So you tell me how I'm going to get that home and make it work.
Yeah, this sounds like probably it's more house than you should be buying. So if you're putting $60,000 down, that means you need to borrow $240,000. On an income of $40,000 a year, that's probably a lot more than you need to be borrowing. That's about six times your income, and that's going to leave you in a very difficult position in terms of managing that obligation. And actually, at those numbers, you may actually not get the mortgage at all.
But
that might be outside of the guidelines.
But I have great credit, Tendai. I mean, come on.
Yeah.
And have you seen the house? So did I explain that this house is the house? I mean, come on.
Yeah. Yeah, so you have great credit now, but probably if you get this house, you will no longer have great credit. You know, your credit score is only one element that goes into the decision about whether or not a lender will give you a loan. So in this case, I think the debt-to-income ratio is just going to be too high for you to be able to borrow that money. So, you know, probably the best thing to do is to maybe try and find a less expensive house. You might, maybe you can go to a less expensive neighborhood and still get a comparable house, or maybe get something smaller. Or, you know, maybe you have somebody else. You're probably going to need somebody else to help you purchase that house.
I don't want to live in those neighborhoods.
Yeah, but, you know, I think we all have financial limitations on the things we can and cannot do. And this may be a situation where you have run into one of your financial limitations.
Okay. All right. We're going to come back and in just a few minutes and wrap everything up and get a little bit more advice from Tendai Kapfidze. He is a chief economist. Welcome back to Money Making Sense, the show that talks about all things money. Today we're talking about, are you taking on too much debt with that mortgage payment? Joining me today is Tendai Kapfidze. He is with LendingTree, and you're a chief economist. As we wrap up this discussion, Tendai, there's one thing we haven't talked about. I actually ignored all of your advice, Tendai. I bought that house for $300,000. I put the $60,000 in. I took out mortgage is $240,000. And I'm not going to say you're right, but I have been living off of Top Ramen for the last year. And I have to take public transportation now because I couldn't afford my car payments and they repossessed my car. I still have the house, though. Is there something I can do to help lower those mortgage payments?
Well, if you got your house a year ago or even any period before that, there may be a great chance to refinance your mortgage and get a lower interest rate. So a refinance basically means you're going to go to a lender, they're going to give you a new mortgage, and they're going to pay off your old mortgage. And the way that can benefit you is that interest rates today are more than 1% lower than where they were last year. So that could substantially reduce your monthly payment.
I've heard that interest rates really dropped out over this last year.
Yeah, they've been declining in part because, you know, people were worried about how well the economy was doing. But there are much lower interest rates out there today than they were a year ago. And so definitely it's a good idea to shop around and try and see if you can get a better interest rate than what is currently on your loan.
Okay, so what I've learned from you today is, if I want to buy a house, if I don't have one already, and I'm looking at buying a house, especially in the Salt Lake Valley, where we are the third highest leveraged city in the entire U.S., I cannot believe we are more people here per capita are leveraged than in San Francisco. But what I learned from you is, if I want to buy a house, I really should check my debt-to-income ratio. How comfortable am I going to be taking on a lot of debt, getting a mortgage? And
that's correct.
Try to make sure my mortgage is not more than 3 times my yearly income.
Yep.
And then if I did buy a house within even over the last couple of years and I'm just feeling the squeeze, maybe see if I can refinance it and get those payments lowered, and that might help out.
Yeah, definitely. And, you know, on refinancing, it's really easy to figure that out. For example, on LendingTree, we have a calculator that you could use. You just put in a few numbers, and it will tell you immediately if there's an opportunity for you to try and save. We also have calculators that help you figure out how much house you can afford as well.
Oh.
So those tools are available.
And where do we go for that?
Those are all on LendingTree.com. And if you just go on the website, you'll see there'll be different sections for different types of financial products. You go to the housing section for all those housing calculators. But also, whether you want to buy a car or get a credit card, or you have student loan debt that you maybe want to refinance, we have all that information available, and we have a lot of tools that help you figure out the optimal decision for your particular situation.
You can refinance student loans?
Yes, you can refinance student loans. And another thing people don't know is that you can refinance auto loans. So you can, get lower interest rates on any of the debt that you have today, especially because the Federal Reserve has been cutting interest rates. So most interest rates are lower today than they were a year ago.
I forgot to mention that debt I had out of college about 5 years ago, but I didn't know I could refinance it. I may need to do that.
Yeah, definitely. You know, use the calculators and see if there's savings. Depending on each person's individual situation, they may or may not have savings. But it certainly doesn't cost you anything to try and find out.
Thank you so much, Tendai Kapfidze. You are the chief economist at LendingTree, and you've just helped us figure out how we can either avoid getting into too much debt, like most of the other Salt Lake residents here, or if we're already in it, how we can lower that by refinancing. Thanks for listening. You can email me with any questions or topics you want to hear about at hkelly@ksl.com. That's H-K-E-L-L-Y at ksl.com. And because this is Money Making Sense, you can subscribe for free on Spotify, Overcast, Apple Podcasts, anywhere you listen to your favorite podcast, and you'll never miss another episode.
Thanks for being a Money Making Sense listener. Follow your common sense onto social media, Money Making Sense, on Facebook, Twitter, and Instagram.